I think I see a lot of people taking a go-to-market motion that's not the best one for them just because it's what they know.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome, everybody, to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here today with Steve Benson. Steve, what's up? How are you today?
Ben, thanks for having me. I'm great today. It's a beautiful Wednesday in the fall here.
Beautiful Wednesday. What's beautiful about this podcast, Steve, is you're on the way up. I'm on the way up. 5 years down the road, people are going to be listening to this and be like, wow, that was a great conversation that happened on a Wednesday in the fall in October. But yeah, man, the goal here is really just to bring value to everybody at home. And once I hit 1 billion listeners, as early as this year, wow, we'll be huge. But I'm already on a tangent. Y'all, Steve is the host of Outside Sales Talk podcast. His entire career has been in outside sales with companies like IBM, Autonomy, Google, and after becoming Google Enterprise's top performing salesperson in the world in 2009, in 2012, he founded Badger Maps to help outside salespeople be more successful. He has been selected as one of the top 40 most inspiring leaders in sales lead management, and by sharing his experience, Steve's goal is to help outside salespeople perform at their best. Good stuff, man.
Thanks. Let's
start with the simple stuff, because I presume you didn't just pop out of your mother's womb and you're a kick butt sales rep. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. What brought you into outside sales, and why do you love what you do?
Well, I've kind of always viewed sales and marketing as the lubrication of the economy. And so it was always an exciting and interesting area for me to kind of sit in between organizations and be the person that's seeking to create value for an organization by bringing them what their own organization does. And that always excited me, I think, when I was learning about different business roles and kind of coming up. After business school, I went to work for IBM, and they taught me a ton about sales. They had a great sales training program, and then I took that to Google and did, you know, and this is kind of in the beginning of cloud computing, so it was an exciting time to be at Google. And then I kind of came across this problem when I was at Google, because I was working a lot with their mapping stuff and also their mobile stuff. And my background was in field sales, and so I kind of understood the problems that field sales people had, and how mapping and mobile could help some of those problems with the right software. And so I started Badger Maps in 2012 to solve those problems.
Cool. So mapping and mobile. Let's define what Badger Maps do. Kind of create an image in the listeners' minds. And as a side note, anybody listening, what I'm going to listen for I believe as a marketing firm, I'm in sales as well. I'm not going to listen for specifically what I can do as an outside sales rep. I'm going to listen to Steve's story, a little bit about how he came to these realizations. I believe that any listener can extract a ton of wisdom from this, whether they're in outside sales or not. You just happen to be in outside sales. You saw there was a problem. Tell us a little bit about how you built Badger Maps and exactly what you do.
Yeah. So, you know, in a nutshell, what Badger Maps does is helps field salespeople by allowing them to take all their customer data, see it in a mapping environment and visualize it, understand what's going on, who to focus on, given the constraint of, as a field salesperson, you can only be in one place at a time. So if you're an inside salesperson, you can pick up the phone and call the UK 1 minute and Hawaii the next minute, right? But as a face-to-face salesperson, a field salesperson, you're in this one neighborhood of Honolulu for the afternoon. So, you know, or you're driving northwest out of Honolulu. Who should you stop along the way? Who should you focus on the way back? Who's important right now because of this, that, and the other thing? And what does that schedule look like? What does that route look like if you're going to have six meetings in a day? And so what we do is we attach to wherever their data about their customers is, usually a CRM system. Sometimes it's a spreadsheet, but if it's a CRM system, we'll link up with it. So then we'll bring that data in and give them a bunch of tools to make their day more efficient, help them focus on the right people, spend their time more efficiently. And that's really the focus of Badger Maps.
I love it. We all need to have the right tools. Obviously, that helps with efficiency, scheduling. What other tools do you recommend for any sales rep, business development, leadership, a business owner? What tools as a manager, as an owner, and as a sales rep have been the most valuable for you?
Well, I think it kind of depends on what your go-to-market motion looks like. So on the sales side, you might be going to market with bricks and mortar retail sales, right? So you got a place people are coming to purchase stuff from you. So maybe you're a clothing store. You'd want a different set of tools to manage that sales motion than if you were an inside salesperson, where I think, you know, it's really important to be able to measure what's going on the phones, how many dials are occurring, what's the length of those, you know, how long does it take us to get back to the people that are reaching out to us, measuring those types of tools or measurement tools in that regard are really important. If it's more of a going to market with so close.io is a great one there. And there are a bunch of phone platforms now that help you do that sort of thing. If you're more ticket based, or Zendesk has a great product for that. If it's more like you're written in a written way, interacting with customers, email, IM, et cetera, Zendesk has a really nice product. If it's more of a traditional sales motion, I think the CRM is super important across almost all these types of things. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different CRMs, right? And different ones are appropriate for different companies, depending on their size, depending on what their go-to-market motion is. Is it more of a marketing focused go-to-market motion? Is it more of a face-to-face motion? How big is the company? Is really important. If you have if you're an enterprise, you got more than 250 sales reps, you tend to bump into enterprise type problems. Mm-hmm. The CRMs that are really useful for big companies of that nature are Salesforce. I think Microsoft Dynamics has some competitive advantages against Salesforce these days, primarily because of their purchase of LinkedIn, but also their integration with the entire Microsoft suite. But really, LinkedIn, I think, it provides them with some competitive advantages for Microsoft Dynamics. So if I were choosing an enterprise CRM, I'd probably go that direction. And then if you're a smaller company, you know, there's HubSpot has a fantastic CRM product with some really great extensibility into the marketing area, a lot of marketing automation products that were kind of their original core business. If you have more of a marketing motion, if it's more of a back and forth motion, Zendesk CRM is really great. If it's more of like a ticketing motion to sell, Zoho is kind of like a Salesforce, very, very similar to Salesforce, but a lot cheaper, and kind of, you know, they've kind of rebuilt a lot of that functionality, but and sell it a lot cheaper. And then let's see, this Pipedrive has some really nice visualization tools for your Salesforce. They're a great CRM. Insightly is a great CRM, in particular if you have like project management stuff you want to be dealing with. They, you know, if you're like a primarily a project management, if your customer interactions are project based, like you're a consulting firm or something, it's a, you know, that Insightly can be really great for you. I'm trying to think of what other CRMs are worth chatting about here. I talked about Dynamics, Zoho, Salesforce, Insightly, Pipedrive, Zoho, HubSpot. So yeah, I mean, those
it's a lot those of are options.
That's my quick take on sales tools. You know, there are a thousand sales tools or marketing tools, and really depending on what your specific situation is, your specific motion is, it's really, you know, a lot of times they can get you a 10% bump in revenue if you deploy them and manage them right. You know, we help this small slice of the world, field salespeople, and our tools really custom built for that group only. But so you got to kind of figure out what are the tools that are good for my group and the way I do things. And it's really, it's worth having someone on your team focus on your sales team focused on this type of sales operations, sales technology, sales enablement stuff. Even if you only have 10 sales reps, the 11th person on the team should probably be someone that you bring in to manage the operations, and particularly the technology, because if you make each sales rep 30% better by all these different tools and capabilities, you know, it's better to have that 11th person basically becomes like three people if you do it right. So it might even be the sixth person on the team you want as someone who can really manage that stuff.
I love that. I have a music background, and they say that if you've got a good lighting team, that's an additional member to the band, because the experience it brings having someone on operations handling these processes will just in potentially 5, 10, 20x your efficiency if you have the right tools. What's great about show notes writers and my team is I'll make sure that this is like me giving you the show notes writers a little hint. Put that in the show notes, all the links to those CRMs, so people can choose the one that best fits for what they're looking to accomplish. That'd be really cool. Either you or I should do this. Put together a resource sheet of all the CRMs, because there's lots of options. Let's quickly talk to the person who doesn't have a CRM, because maybe they're small, they're agile, they're a startup, they're working out of an Excel spreadsheet. Do you recommend someone who's just getting started go straight to a CRM? What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think, you know, I wouldn't use Excel just because unless you're one person, then, you know, but even then you want things backed up in the cloud. But like I'd go with a Google spreadsheet over that, just because it's more than one person able to live work out of it at once. And Google really that's slides. All. Yeah. A Google spreadsheet is all for, in terms of being a CRM, you know, a CRM is basically, it's a database with a GUI over the top of it. And, you know, a Google spreadsheet or Excel, that, you know, it's basically a simple database with, and the GUI is that software, but that's a very simple way to, and everyone has a CRM. I mean, if your CRM is just taking notes on little yellow sticky notes and putting them all over your desk, that still is a customer relationship management system. It's not a digital one, but it is a CRM system, right?
We'll count it.
But I think most organizations, as they mature, you know, if you've got two salespeople, they can be working out of a spreadsheet together if you don't have that many customers. But like, you know, pretty quickly you're going to want to take that spreadsheet and upload it into a system, and you want to choose carefully, because these things are very sticky, and often the cost escalates with the system. Like a lot of people use, you know, Salesforce's small free version, and then find themselves, it's kind of stuck in that ecosystem. I think that certain software companies have gotten very good at, you know, bringing people in, and as they scale, it becomes pretty, their stuff is pretty sticky. We just ripped out a piece of software that was in our infrastructure stack that had been there for 10 years because they gave it to us for the first 3 years for free. But then we ended up, you know, spending $200K a year on it or something after that. But it was hard to rip out, right? It's sticky stuff. And it's, you know, you got to slow the pace of innovation to deal with it, to deal with ripping it out. And it took a lot of work and engineering cycles, right? So, and it's similar on the sales side. So you want to choose a CRM and another technology that really fits with your motion and what your motion's going to be as you scale. I mean, that's something to think about. And, you know, but I mean, on day one, I think a spreadsheet's fine. Once you have three or four people that are interacting with this customer data, you probably want to upgrade to a CRM. And if you're a small company, I'd say something like a HubSpot is probably a great recommendation. And Insightly, depending on what business you're in and what your industry is. And HubSpot's especially useful if you have like important marketing things that you're going to want to, you know, if marketing is going to be really important and like digital marketing, that's a great choice. There's Zoho and Insightly, Pipedrive, kind of depending on what kind of company you are. Pipedrive is great for software companies. Close.io is great if you have an inside sales motion. And you're a smaller organization or a mid-sized organization. I think you don't need a CRM day one, but you're going to mature into one. And these things are well thought out. I don't recommend trying to build your own, even though it is just a database with a GUI. They've put a lot of thought into these things, and the integrations and the ecosystems they have wrapped around them are really important.
We're
kind of an add-on to CRM systems. So we've connected to the largest CRM systems, you know, and the ones that are the most popular. And we bring mapping and routing and scheduling and to those ecosystems. But that's an important thing to think about as you're choosing a CRM is, what does the ecosystem look like? If you choose one that's super niche, you're not going to get access to a lot of the goodies because a lot of other companies haven't built their stuff to those yet. Like, so we've done the biggest six CRMs. I mean, technically we can do any one, but we have like really nice integrations built out to those largest six. If you're looking at like a niche, number 35 player, we'll integrate with it, you know, with an FTP or other Zapier, stuff like that. But a company like us, who's we're a mid-sized software company, we won't have those types of integrations built out yet.
Makes perfect sense. I think it's great advice. I'm not here to judge anybody. Part of why I use a green screen is I have whiteboards all over my room here, where I'm writing down my schedule. I've got some, you know, like client work on a freaking whiteboard. Just because for me, writing it out and having it in my eyesight at all times helps. We'll call it a CRM. But another thing you and I joked about when we first met is what I'm doing with the whiteboards. It works for me, but a lot of us could maybe call that a rookie mistake. We're just kind of like getting started here. What other rookie mistakes? You don't even have to be a rookie, or it might just be a misconception or something you were taught wrong, or you were in the wrong system in a previous company and you learned the wrong way. What other mistakes do you see, you know, people in sales or business development making all the time?
I think I see a lot of people taking a go-to-market motion that's not the best one for them just because it's what they know, right? Mm-hmm. So you see people like, I run into this in software a lot lately, actually, where people have like an inside sales model. And when I cut my teeth in the software inside industry, we did a lot of outside sales too. We would go and meet with customers. And I think, you know, maybe it's the younger generation, but they prefer to, you know, not leave their houses and stay behind the screen and not get in front of customers. And I think
that's part of why I love LinkedIn. I'll ask you about it in a little bit, but I understand sometimes I like to do that.
I think it's easier and more efficient in a lot of ways, but it doesn't if that's your go-to-market motion into the, and you don't have any kind of way to get in front of customers and sit down with them, a lot of times you don't connect with them the same way. You don't understand each other as well. There's a lot of human things that happen face to face. And so I see a lot, I guess I see a lot of people going to market with the wrong motion. Like they're going to market with retail when they should be incorporating some e-commerce, or they over rely on e-commerce when they could open a store, or they do inside sales when they could be doing some outside sales, or they only do outside sales when they could be mixing it up with some inside sales as well, with different people on the team going after the smaller deals, et cetera. So I guess that's one of the big mistakes I see. I talk to a lot of people about their go-to-market stuff and go-to-market motion and what they're doing. And that's something I see a lot, is kind of people sticking with what they know on the marketing side too. You know, they won't be taking advantage of some modern best practices because they kind of already know how to do these types of things. And so they stick with them. Whereas if they were to bring somebody in who could modernize what they're doing, they'd really drive some more revenue. Other mistakes, I think people not looking to outsource. You know, it's a globalizing world, and a lot of times you can find talent all over the world. You know, talent's equally distributed around the face of the earth, but it's not equally used. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can go to Asia or South Asia or Africa or Europe, lots of other places to find talent or skills when you need them, with greater availability and lower price than if you were to just hire in San Francisco, for example. That's something I see in my industry a lot. Yeah, those are some
they're good ones.
Key ones that jump off the table to me.
Yeah. So automate, be willing to outsource, hire. These are huge ones. They're key ones. And one thing that was big that you mentioned, it, you know, you went into, as Badger Maps, you're a product specifically for, you know, outside sales reps going in, mapping out their destinations. It's a very specific go-to-market strategy. You didn't do like 16 other things. But I've noticed, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about it, is you've started to incorporate, like I saw you've done a LinkedIn Learning training and you've got new offerings on the website. Talk about how you started with one idea and now all these other opportunities came about, but it's not like you tried to do them all at once, correct?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think some things lead to other things, right? I mean, I get paid for the LinkedIn Learning type stuff that I'll do, like, you know, but really, I don't do that as much for the money. I mean, you know, 20 grand a year or something is nothing to shake a stick at. But I've only done a couple classes for them, and so I get the residuals off that. But I didn't do that because I had a yearning to teach or because I wanted the 20 G's a year. It was because a lot of people take those classes and then they find out that Badger Maps exists and then they come and check that out and see if it would be a good fit for them. So that was a lot of these things kind of build on each other. Like you mentioned, the new products on our website. So Badger this year came out with our second product. It's a sales university. It's called Badger Sales University. And it's kind of like Masterclass or Netflix. You know, it's a video platform, except all the videos are sales training classes. So the business model is, sales experts in sales that have made videos can put their videos on there, and usually they'll sell it. They usually have their videos on their website behind a paywall or something. They sell them for $500 or whatever, but they can put them on there. And then people that buy access to the service get to see everything for, you know, $29 a month. And so it's like, it's a new way for them to monetize all this content that they've created and usually sell. It's hard to sell sales training courses for $500 for a course, for like a, you know, six, you know, hour long courses or whatever. It's a lot easier to get people. It's much more stomachable to be like, hey, it's $29 a month and you get Absolutely. Access to all of it. I think that model has been well proven by how modern education is occurring, right? Masterclass and consumption of content through Netflix or Hulu or whatever. So I guess to your original question, you know, we didn't start doing both of these things at the same time, but, you know, because we had Badger Maps and we have 5,000 companies using this for their field sales teams, it made sense to create it paid for itself already. Like if we already had these 5,000 people that we can very easily get to take a look at it and it's a valuable thing, a lot of them raise their hand and say, oh yeah, I'll take that for $29 a month a rep. Sure. I mean, that looks very educational. This looks like a great product, and they can check it out and kick the tires on it and see if they want it. But because we already have that many customers, they'll give this a look, and then a bunch of them buy it. And then, so it kind of pays for itself right there. And then you can market it to everyone else as well. So you don't start out kind of doing everything. You get a toehold in one thing, and then it's easier to sell to those customers than new people. And also that allows you to, it enables you to do other things.
Makes perfect sense. I'm all about it. I love I've actually never done Masterclass, but I love the concept. I know personally, see, I've literally spent $3,000 on a course in training before. I've spent sets of 300. I've spent $997. But right. To have all those purchases in one place,
well, that's
fingertips. Exactly. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, and I honestly think people end up spending, getting more of exactly what they want and spending more money over time. Cause I mean, you're obviously a big consumer of this stuff, and remind me and I'll get you a sample login, like a trial. Well, I mean, the thing has a free month trial anyway, but I guess I can give it out. I don't know what it is off the top of my head here, but
it's, I want two free months. Give me two.
Well, that's what we do. I've got a code that gets 80% off the second month, and the trade being people give their credit cards for that second month at 80%. But
makes sense.
I'm trying to think of what that code would be. I'll pull it up here while we're talking. I'll be able to find it. But I think you're a big consumer of these things. But even you're spending a lot on these courses. But most people probably would spend more on, you know, if they're spending $29 a month than if they just were purchasing $300 once every 3 years. And they're going to learn more and they get more out of it. Like people, you know, just like with the same concept of Netflix, right? They can get exactly what they want when they want it. It's kind of at their fingertips. They're about to have an important negotiation. They can pull it up. So it unlocks value. If I can get these guys that sell their courses for, you know, $1,000, if I can get them to put them on our platform instead, and then, you know, an avid learner like you can chew through a bunch of them, it's cool. And you weren't going to buy their stuff anyway, but now you do buy their stuff and then tell other people about it. It's just, it unlocks a lot of value, I think, and there just wasn't a platform like this. Like Masterclass is like very much like, oh, we have one course on economics and it's taught by, you know, this famous economist, Paul Krugman. And, you know, we have one course on cooking and it's taught by, I forget who, some famous chef, but like, you know, it's like, that's an awesome model. But that's much more for like consumers. This is like a professional training. Like it's for salespeople. Like, and there's 200 people making amazing sales training courses out there. So if I can get a bunch of them we've gotten a bunch, but we'll get a bunch more to put their stuff on here. It opens it up to folks, you know, unlocks the value.
Yeah. And if you get that code, let us know, or just let me know afterwards. We'll put it in the show notes. Steve, this is going to be a self-serve. That's part of the beauty of having a podcast. I can ask self-serving questions, but I think some of the listeners might be curious as well. If you're a thought leader in your space and it's somewhere in the sales realm, are you looking for educators to join this platform? And if so, what's the process?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty straightforward model. It's like we make it pretty transparent. So we're just splitting the revenue with the people that bring the courses. So basically, like if someone has they built a, you know, an eight video course about sales negotiation 5 years ago, and currently they sell them as DVDs on their website behind a paywall or behind a paywall or whatever for $1,000. Instead, they can, and they're selling, you know, 17 courses a year, which is how it goes a lot of the time, right? Like these guys, these top sales thought leaders have, you know, they wrote a book and they made some videos And, you know, they just don't really sell a lot of it because they're not driving traffic, right? They're not software companies, right? But they've created this really valuable thing. They just don't really have a way to bring it to market. And so they can then take it and drop it on this platform. And then based on how much it gets watched relative to everything else, we just split the revenue. So if there's one person whose course has got 20% of the views across the whole platform, because we split the revenue off the platform with them, that person alone would get 10% of what the whole platform's take was. So it's a pretty straightforward model. And you know, we're being real choosy about who we bring into the platform, like in terms of like the quality of their content. And, you know, they could be sometimes it's super well-known sales thought leaders, and sometimes it's people who have just created some, you know, they've got a sales consultancy that's maybe not that well-known, but they created some great content on something. We'll pull that in too. The code is Steve80.
Steve80.
Steve80. All uppercase. All one word. Steve80.
We can't make it like Ben the Great or something.
That'd be cooler if I could just change it. But yeah, that gets in the second month at 80% off. So that's, and you can really get a feel for it in 2 months, right? I mean, that's a lot of trial, right? Like, so normally it's just like a 1 month free trial and you can kick the tires on it. But, you know, I think the idea is that if people get access to all this great sales training content, they'll get trained more and they'll just, you know, they'll be waiting. You know, they'll be waiting in a waiting room about to do a negotiation with someone and they'll bring up the negotiation videos or something, you know, like, so it's really having it at your fingertips is nice.
Let me get your hot take on that, because I'm a knowledge junkie. I'm not going to bash knowledge. I think our biggest expense is lack of knowledge. But if I'm about to go into a negotiation, sitting in the hot car, sweating nervously, watching a training video, is that going to make me better?
Maybe that's an extreme example, but you know, I think people are able to recognize, and certainly a good sales manager will recognize, hey, this person needs training in this area. You know, they could brush up on their prospecting skills. They could brush up on their qualification skills. They'll identify, hey, you know, you should learn some more stuff about this. And we buy the team access to this platform. So you can, you know, it's got 60 videos on qualification from a bunch of different experts talking about it, you know, watch some.
Like, yeah.
Maybe not in the hot car though. That does sound fairly horrifying. You're about to go into a negotiation. You're like learning how to overcome objections. Then that's a bad situation.
Even in a cold call, it's not the best situation. The only reason I bring it up is it sounds like, especially with a good sales manager or someone who's driven to self-study, you learn it beforehand. So when the instance occurs, you already have a reference bank of information you've learned. So when you're going into the negotiation, you don't have to cram like you're going into a test.
Yeah.
You've practiced, you've held yourself accountable. You're ready to crush, whether it's negotiation, anything, a presentation, you're ready to go.
Yeah. Well, and that one tip I have for this cool. is one of my little back pocket tips I have for sales managers. You can look at all the skills that are really that you feel are critical for your team to be successful, you know, like, because, you know, maybe it's, oh, our team needs to be great at qualification because there's a lot of tire kickers on this product, or that our team needs to be great at negotiation because it's, you know, thin margin and fierce competition, or our team needs to be great at whatever the thing is, right? Lead generation, whatever else, there's 50 things that go into sales. And so as a sales manager, you know what's important. You can figure out who on your team is good at those individual skill sets. And a lot of times, like if you had 5 people out of your team of 100 who are like really performing well, they're all great at different things. And the reason they, like maybe this guy is performing really well because they're great at lead gen, and this girl is really great at performing because she's really good at negotiation. And this guy, you can feel out like who's great at what. Enable them to be a leader on the team and teach everyone else how they do it for your product specifically. Like have them, you know, in one of the team meetings, have them run the class, have them give the presentation, have them talk about how they do it to be successful. Because people listen to their peers, and because they know Sally kicks ass at this one thing, people, you know, word gets around, and, you know, they obviously, most sales organizations are transparent. You can see her performance. So they're likely to listen to her mm-hmm. if she's teaching the class on negotiation. They're like, you hear what she did in the Johnson account? She crushed it. Like, so let's listen to her. So yeah, I think that's a great tip as a sales manager is you don't have to be the expert in everything, but you're on your team. You need to find the expertise in your team and empower them to be coaches.
That makes sense. Well, what this reminds me of, I don't know who I'm ripping off right now, but leaders create other leaders. And the beauty about leaders create other leaders is guess what those leaders do?
Create leaders.
Yeah, they create more leaders. So have your team in mentorship roles and then have the mentee work their way up to that mentorship role. I love this stuff. Would love to continue the conversation. I've been doing this thing where I dive so deep, I forget to do the rapid fire round. So for the listeners that love the rapid fire round, I'm going to make sure we don't miss it today, Steve. It's short, sweet, easy to answer questions. You can cross it out. You can say pass. I sometimes joke that it's like, whose line is it anyway? That the points don't matter. But it's Family Feud that we want to rattle them off quick. So I often start with coffee or tea.
Coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Favorite time of year?
Spring.
Let's do a couple podcasts. So you have a podcast. We haven't talked about it yet. Tell us about your podcast and then a couple others that you listen to.
Yeah, I have Outside Sales Talk. It's a podcast I've been doing for about 5 years. We've done 200 episodes or so. We bring on top sales thought leaders. You know, people who have written books on different topics and sales, et cetera. And I'll interview them through the lens of all our listeners are field salespeople. So teach what it is that you teach, but to field, like knowing the people listening are field salespeople and people who manage field salespeople. So that's kind of the whole, there wasn't a podcast. There's a lot of sales podcasts. There wasn't one about field sales specifically. So yeah, Outside Sales Talk, it's got some great content on there. Not that I created it. It's, you know, it's the guests that create the value. I just ask the questions.
Yeah. Let me put an exclamation. Cause that's similar to what you were saying. I was thinking about it with the training. And a book that comes to mind is Who Not What, and it's Who Do You Know and How Can You Collaborate with People? I'll put that in the show notes, the book Who Not What, but it's what who's in your world have skill sets and knowledge that you don't. And then you can put together a training software with them. You can have a podcast with them. You don't have to have all the answers. So it sounds great. You're collaborating with other field outside sales reps. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think if I was a field sales rep, it would be the top one on my queue, even though I am subscribed as well. What other podcasts are you subscribed to? What else do you listen to?
One of my favorites is SASTR, SASTR. It's very specific to people leading software companies. It's useful for, that's one that I listen to pretty regularly. That's one, that's one that I like a lot. You know, it's funny. I don't even listen to my own podcast, but, I was there when it was made though. So it's fine. I mean, yes. I mean, that's really the only one I listen to regularly. It's probably got 600 episodes or so, though. So it's that's plenty. They come out like 3 a week. I hardly stay up with that one.
Highly bingeable. We'll do one more big one.
Nate Latka's is a great podcast too. Nathan Latka. He has a great one. It's about SaaS companies. If you're not running SaaS companies or investing in SaaS companies, it's not relevant, but if you are, it's very relevant.
One more big question I like to ask of, I mean, you worked with Google, LinkedIn Learning, launching your business. It can be something we already talked about, but what is one of, if not the most proud moment of your career thus far?
The most proud moment. I mean, I got that big award at Google for being their best sales guy. That was a big one. And a surprise. I mean, I didn't know it was coming, but it was like at the annual meeting or whatever. So that was cool. That was a big one.
That is pretty cool.
But
I mean, everyone heard of Google? I've heard of Google.
it's a small monopoly based in California. I probably my most proud thing, the most important thing I've accomplished is definitely, you know, solving the problems I've solved for field salespeople at Badger Maps. And, you know, it's a sizable company now. I think probably crossing 5 million in revenue was a big milestone for software. As a software company, you cross 5 million. It kind of means you've got staying power. You've got enough people working on the product that you're solving. Enough people are paying for the product, but it's a real problem that you're solving. Mm. And that's enough revenue to pay enough engineers to keep making it great and keep growing the thing. So that was a big milestone. I'd say that's for sure my biggest accomplishment is growing that business to there.
Love it. Steve, I know you've got to run off and record an episode for your show in a moment here, so I'll let you go. But one more opportunity. How do we support you? How do we follow up, connect with you on LinkedIn? What do you recommend we do?
You know, best way to get a hold of me is LinkedIn. Just search Steve Benson, Badger Maps. Badger like the animal, you know, Badger. Mm-hmm. I went to Wisconsin, hence the name of the company. But
love it.
It's the best way to get a hold of me. Website's badgermapping.com. So if you know field salespeople, best way to support me is let field salespeople know that we make a platform for field salespeople to help them do a whole bunch of stuff at this point. So it started out with just mapping and routing and leads, but now, you know, it's kind of built on itself over time.
Cool. Connect with on LinkedIn. It's on the show notes, gang. Steve, thanks again, man, for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.